I love this song. Help by the Beatles. Well, hi, everybody. I'm Beatie Cohn-Bredos, and welcome again to the Ask Beatie Show. And for those of you who are new listeners, I can't believe that I have been actually hosting the Ask Beatie Show here on the Progressive Radio Network for over 8 years. It's absolutely amazing how quickly the time goes by. Which is why it is so important, so important that every day we try to live our life in ways that are really in our best interest. Well, I am a psychotherapist, yes, one of those, and a sex therapist. I'm also the author of the groundbreaking book on relationships, a book that I certainly wish that I had had years and years ago when I began my own dating and relationship life. For better, for worse, forever, Discover the Path to Lasting Love is a book that I wrote after doing research with 450 willing participants in the Boston, Providence, and Connecticut area. And I came up with a formula, actually a 10-step formula that teaches us all how to assess. Yes, assess. It's not sexy. It's not romantic, but absolutely, absolutely critical that we learn how to assess who is right for you and who is wrong for you before committing to any serious relationship. Because when you think about it, right, we assess every single thing in our lives. Our computers, our cars, our lipsticks, I mean, everything. We go through this whole process. We're very busy, We read consumer reports and we look at the reviews and we look at the likes. And yet when we think about relationships, I think that very, very few of us would think about the importance of assessing who we let into our life and how close we let these people into our lives. So again, the book, For Better, For Worse, Forever, Discover the Path to Lasting Love. You can buy it and you can read it on Amazon. Well, I'm also the advice columnist, which I've really, really been enjoying for the last, it was a year in September, for Dan's papers in the Hamptons. I write 2 to 3 Ask Beatie columns every single month. And for those of you who've not been fortunate enough to get out to the Hamptons recently and read the hardcovers, you are able to read the columns digitally. Of course, we can do almost everything digitally. Online. I'm also a national speaker, national radio and television expert guest, and I have a private practice here in New York City. It was really nice today. I looked outside and checked the temperature, and it was in the 30s. And for a Canadian girl, none of this should really concern me, but it's sunny out and beautiful out. I was able to take a brisk walk, which is something that all of us should do every single day to really get ourselves going. So I do have a private practice here in New York City and also in East Hampton. So people ask me all the time, so what is your show? What is your show really all about? Well, in one word, and really it is one word, it is about empowerment. And we talk about all of the things that we can do, not just think about, not just wish about, not just dream about, to improve the quality of our lives and the quality of our relationships. So naturally, we talk about mental health issues and sexuality and relationships. And again, it is about doing and maximizing our physical and emotional well-being despite stressors of life and despite the fact that we cannot change our history. So for those of you who've been listening, you probably have heard my mantra hundreds and hundreds of times. And my mantra is that we need to be willing to acknowledge, address, and resolve as best as we can. Nothing is perfect and no relationship is perfect. As best as we can, the things that get in the way of our being able to really live a happy and joyful life. And one of the things that I really, really hope, and I would love to hear from you whether or not I have convinced you, whether or not I have been successful in all these years in convincing you that we don't need to navigate this life and the ups and the downs that we all go through on our own, and that reaching out to family and friends, if we are lucky, lucky enough to have supportive, loving, compassionate family and friends in our life, and if need be, to find a really good professional. This is something I'm going to be talking about because all people in my field are not the same. So again, being willing to reach out to people who can help us make our life journey easier and less isolated and less alienated and lonely, because people are continuing to really struggle. Depression, I think, is probably at an all-time high. I look at the statistics every week, and I hope that the statistics are going to be going down, but unfortunately, they're not. So we're talking about, 17 million adults, and I think that number is probably low. In the United States, who are suffering from clinical depression. A lot of people, translating into about 40 million Americans, are suffering from a variety of anxiety disorders. When I look at the domestic violence statistics, it is so frightening and so concerning that three women are killed every single day by their so-called intimate partner. And again, I don't want to depress you because I have good news about all of this and what we can really do. But if we're looking at the divorce rates, again, 48% of first marriages end in divorce, 67% of second marriages end in divorce. And for third marriages, we would hope, right? We've learned something from marriage number one, marriage number two. But the reality is that about 74% of people who are marrying for the third time also end up in a divorce court. So we're going to have to be a lot more savvy about what we're doing, certainly when it comes to choosing partners. And again, I have really identified, and I keep saying this over and over and over again, the three things that we all need to do to never make a mistake in love again. And the first thing has nothing to do with a partner. The first thing has to do with us. And we need to make sure that we are in a good place emotionally and psychologically and psychiatrically, and that we have worked through as best as we possibly can the skeletons in our closet, that we all have skeletons in the closet, and our unfinished business that continues to get in the way of our life and our relationship. So the real question then becomes, are we as individuals, are we willing to actually do the work? And a lot of this work really requires working with a competent mental health professional. And I tell people all the time, and I know you've heard me say this, is that the relationship is important. As important as our relationships are, they really do need to be the icing on the cake. And we need to be the cake. We need to be sure that we have ourselves together so that we are then able to make some really good decisions about the people who we let in to our lives. And again, number two, we have to become savvy students, savvy relationship education students, and learn once and for all the ingredients that actually go into a healthy relationship. And despite all of the self-help books and all of the talks about mental health and all of the programs, we are still continuing to miss the boat, so that we need to become serious and really once and for all be committed, not to somebody else, but be committed to ourselves to become savvy, really savvy about relationships. And of course, number three, my book, as an unromantic book as it is, it really does guide you and helps you to accurately assess, assess who is good for you and who is also wrong for you, so that you can get out and not waste a lot of time. And I see so many people in my private practices over the years who spent years and years in really dysfunctional, destructive, self-destructive relationships because mostly they are not feeling good about themselves. They're afraid of being alone. They can't manage in their own minds to navigate starting over. And yet, just remember this, that a little bit of poison in our lives is poison. So people will say to me, well, he only hits me or she only hits me, you know, when he or she is drunk. Or it's only episodically that our relationship becomes violent, verbally, emotionally, physically, sexually, but it is that little bit of poison that I have found over all these years of practicing, and I've been practicing now for over 35 years, that will ultimately kill us one way or another, if not physically, then emotionally or psychologically. So we really have to be very, very honest with ourselves and being protective of ourselves and being committed to ourselves to doing in-depth assessments. I don't know how many of you happened to read my letter in the New York Times today. And the letter, the heading actually, is What Holds a Marriage Together or Doesn't? And I was responding to a writer who had written about Tom Brady. We all know about Tom Brady, the football player, and his ex-wife, Gisele Bündchen, a model and I believe sometimes actress. And what I found, and this is what I wrote in the Times, is that over the past 35 years as a practicing psychotherapist and sex therapist, I have found, now just listen to what I have found over all these years, and you can tell me whether or not you agree or disagree. I have found that the variables that determine how well or how badly we do in our marriages or relationships have little to do with fame or fortune or race or education, gender, sexual orientation, religion, retirement, unemployment, or serious illness. And what I have found over all these years is that successful couples care enough. And that's what is really important. Do we care enough about each other? Are serious about their commitment to their marriages or relationships and to each other? And the bottom line, and are willing to discuss and negotiate differences and make compromises with the goal of coming up with a win-win resolution. Now, if you don't know how to do this, because these are skills, none of us were born knowing these skills. And for the most part, most people never learn skills. And if you think about it, where are we going to learn these skills if we don't see it in our family growing up and certainly in the majority of schools? I mean, schools are not teaching really in-depth relationship education. Of course, aside from the school that I am connected with, and I am so proud to be connected to East Hampton High School in East Hampton, where they not only care about relationship education, but we are partnering together to really do something. And with the head of the health department, James Stewart, we have been doing some amazing things with hundreds and hundreds of high school students who wouldn't normally have an opportunity to really think about and learn about the ingredients that really have to go into a successful relationship. And at the same time, they are learning about mental health issues. They are learning about communication and problem solving. And I am just so appreciative. And I am so impressed with the administrators, Sarah Smith, who is the principal, with Adam Fine, who is the superintendent of the East Hampton School Board, willing to be involved with people who get it. And who care enough to give the children something that is so important in terms of their being able to launch their lives in their personal relationships. So again, what I've found over all these years, people say to me, "Well, really, Beanie, what do you think are the two most important ingredients that happen to make or break relationships?" And I think two of the key relationship ingredients happen to be emotional communication and problem solving. And I really do believe that they are ultimately the two most important ingredients. So that if you don't know how to communicate and you don't know how to problem solve, you are not alone. But then the real question is what are you going to do to hone those very, very, very important skills? Other questions that I have for you. Again, there are many, many things that we can do every single day, but we have to be self-disciplined, we have to be serious, we have to be committed. For example, and Gary Null talks about this all the time, the importance of eating healthily and interacting. I mean, what is so much, lacking in today's society is real face-to-face socialization. And I know that everybody is on their computers and everybody seems to be chatting, and yet it is really not the same. And we're starting to see higher and higher rates of depression and suicide with younger people who are spending, hours and hours and hours on their computers. And again, the importance of sleep and of course exercise, weight training, yoga, meditation, and again being really, really conscious of having supportive people in our life. And this is something that I ask you every week as well. If you take a look at the people who are in your life, how would you rate them? Are they hopefully compassionate and loving and supportive and nice? Or on the other hand, and you have to be really honest with yourself, we all do, or in fact, are they people who are toxic, even if they are only occasionally toxic? But remember that a little bit of poison is still poison. Other things that really help to make the days happy and positive are things like positive visualization, music, dancing, getting into nature. And with the holidays coming, in fact, I was talking to a couple of patients yesterday, with the practice being here in New York City, mostly on Zoom, my East Hampton practice. Fortunately, people are willing and able to come in person. We were talking about the fact that the holidays are almost upon us. Thanksgiving is it's just in a couple of days. And I was asking, some of my single women, what they were planning to do. And typically, the ones that didn't have any family or close friends, they were saying that they were feeling depressed and lonely, and that they had no plans, and they were going to look at Thanksgiving as just another day. And I asked them, I said, "What is something perhaps that you could do that would really be nice for yourself?" And well, they hadn't quite thought about that because it was going to be a lonely, terrible, depressing day. But my question was, okay, that could be one option that you would allow it to be a depressing, lonely day. But there are some other options here. So with one woman, she decided that she was going to have a spa day at home and that she was going to spend the entire day pampering herself and ordering some really, really special food and trying to find a way to celebrate the day even though she didn't have family and friends, and that was something very difficult to deal with, not just on during the holidays, but so that was something positive. Other things that we might normally not think about is, what about volunteering? Going to a soup kitchen, there's so many organizations that would love to have you help, that would love to have you volunteer. And what I have found over the years, even in difficult times that I've experienced in my own life, that giving back to others really made all the difference in the world, in the giving. I've always felt that I get much more back in the giving. That actually in than even in the getting. So think about that if you are alone, Thanksgiving and Christmas and holidays need not be such a depressing time. But again, it's making some positive decisions about what to do that will actually be in your best interest, and not just during holiday time, but every day as well. And if you're finding that despite all this good advice, you are still feeling down in the dumps, and that you've been thinking about and you've been contemplating perhaps reaching out and getting some professional help, then this segment is definitely going to be for you. And the real question is your therapist thinking about getting a therapist? Is your therapist helping or harming you? And I have found that this can literally be one of the most important decisions that an individual could make in their life, and has the potential. Just listen to this. It has the potential for far-reaching consequences, both positive and negative. And it seems that every day I hear about people becoming coaches. So everybody is a coach. And yet, if we are making a decision about who we would like to, in quotes, coach us, or who we would like to be in therapy with, again, we have to be very, very careful and very savvy as a consumer, because trust me, all therapists, all coaches, all psychologists or psychiatrists are absolutely not the same. And you do not want to look at big splashy ads, and you do not want to look at lights on the computer to make a decision about whether or not you should think about contacting and think about working with a particular therapist. I know that when people call me initially, I want them to find out about me, not just to have, a conversation about, what my fees are and how I work. I want people to go to my website. I want people to read my articles. I want to make sure that if people are saying to themselves that they would like to work with me, that we are going to be aligned in some fashion, that they get me, they understand my theoretical orientation, they understand how I work, they understand my expectations, because people work very, very, very differently. And more people today are seeing therapists for a variety of emotional, psychological, psychiatric, sexual and relationship problems. But when you think about it, how can the average consumer know how to choose a therapist and whether or not this particular therapist's therapeutic process and therapeutic orientation is the right one for them? And, as I said, this can really be one of the most important decisions that you can make. So, what can you do that requires outside help? Okay, what if you have problems? For starters, you need to be consumer savvy and remember to do your homework. So I have a list here of some suggestions to help you find a therapist that is right for you. And also, if you see somebody who is wrong for you, and to know if you are being helped or hurt. Yes, there are therapists out there who are hurting and harming patients in the therapeutic process. So if at all possible, get a referral from someone that you trust. Please, please do not be taken in by splashy ads or likes. And you might want to begin with a physician. If you don't feel comfortable asking a friend or a colleague, I mean, I understand that totally, then you really ought to maybe start with a primary care physician or a gynecologist or a urologist. And also, you want to make sure, number two, that the therapist that you choose specializes in your particular problem or problems, because it is not possible to be an expert in all areas. Number three, and I know that I'm asking a lot of you, but this is important. This is how you are going to go about assessing the importance of assessing a potential therapist. You want to check his or her license and make sure that there are no past or pending malpractice complaints filed against your therapist. And everything is online. So all you have to do is Google the person's name and Google malpractice complaints, and everything is going to come up. So again, you're doing your due diligence. You are doing your homework. Number four, expect that your therapist, and again, with this Zoom business, you want to find out whether or not your therapist or potential therapist is willing to see you in person, which again, I still think is ideal, or whether or not his or her practice is still on Zoom. And you have to then decide whether or not this answer is going to work for you. And expect when you go in for your first appointment, whether it is on Zoom or in person, expect that your therapist is going to ask you lots and lots of tough questions about your family background, your relationship history, sex, previous psychiatric problems, including possible hospitalizations, suicide attempts and gestures, medications that you take, prescription and over-the-counter medications, possible addictions, traumas, sexual abuse, sexual assault, affairs, and gender identity issues. Now, expect that many, many of these questions may be very difficult for you to answer, yet it is vital for the therapist to know these facts so that we will be able to make an accurate diagnosis, and not only just diagnose, but really get an accurate picture of who you are and what your issues are, and more importantly, what needs to be acknowledged and addressed and resolved. Now, this is only possible if the right questions are asked and that your answers are honest, and make sure that your potential therapist is on board with this process. I mean, somebody like me believes and has learned that everything begins in the beginning. So even though we can't change what happened 20 or 30 or 40 years ago, it's really important to go back to one's family of origin and understand what happened, what didn't happen, what you learned, what you didn't learn. And again, not all therapists work this way, but I have found this way of working, and patients have found this way of working to be extremely, extremely helpful. Number five, ask yourself, after the first few sessions, whether you are comfortable with your therapist. However, However, do not expect that there is going to be a strong level of comfort instantly, because like any relationship, it takes time for trust to develop. However, if you continue to feel uncomfortable after several sessions, remember that there are other therapists with whom you will be able to connect. And this is where it's important that you trust your gut. You go back, you're not sure. For me, I have a three strikes and you're out type of philosophy, even when I'm meeting people. You know, I may not be sure the first time, and then, okay, I'm going to go back for a second time. Maybe I wasn't in the mood, maybe they'd had a bad day, but after the third encounter, it's either a yes, I'd like to spend time with you, I'd like to get to know you better, or it is a definite no. And please, please give yourself permission to trust those gut feelings that you have. And remember too, that there should be never any inappropriate advances, sexual, verbal, or otherwise, that occurs between you and your therapist. And if there are, you should promptly leave, shut the door, and report this particular therapist to his or her professional association. Number six. See, I'm asking you to do a lot, just like I'm asking you to do a lot when it comes to using my formula and assessing who's right for you and who's wrong for you in your personal and romantic relationships. But believe me, it is important and there is not a shortcut. So, number six, does your therapist respect your time and call you back within 24 hours, including evenings and weekends if necessary? And this is something that is really, really important. You know, I have patients who work with other therapists or who are working with psychiatrists, and there may be crisis, or there just may even be a question. And they either don't get a call back or they will get a call back in a week or two. This is completely, completely unprofessional and unacceptable. Because the fact that health insurance companies often poorly reimburse therapists who are, in network, this should not be your concern. You are entitled, and again, this makes me crazy when I hear that people have 45-minute sessions with therapists. I think it's just a lot of nonsense, and I think that the therapist is definitely taking advantage of a patient's trust. I believe that you are entitled to sessions lasting a minimum of 50 minutes. My hour sessions are 60-minute sessions. I grew up in Canada. I learned in math classes, and my mom was a teacher, that 1 hour is 60 minutes. So when I talk about hour sessions, my sessions are 60-minute sessions. And I've also found, and this was over the years, when people ask me whether or not I do longer sessions, I find and I have found that longer sessions are even better, at least in the beginning. And you may be surprised to hear this, but over the years, I've had patients, particularly couples, who have spent 3, 4, and 5 consecutive hours with me. And what this process does, it actually helps to fast forward the entire therapeutic process. And you know, people will say 4, 5 hours. And I had one man come to New York from California. And we started at 9 o'clock in the morning. And I looked at the clock and it was almost 2 o'clock. And I said to him, you don't want to break. You don't want to take a walk. You don't want to go to the bathroom. No, 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 no. And we continued for several more hours. And so patients who are actually able to, they love the longer sessions because, you know that if you're going and that you say hello and by the time you say goodbye and then you pay, you're, 50-minute sessions now is becoming, 45 minutes or less. And you want to make sure that your therapist is doing his or her due diligence on this very basic level. Really important. Number seven, Is your therapist in contact with your primary care doctor? And this is necessary. This is necessary, even if it's a phone call, even if it's an email, in order to rule out any physical problems or prescription medications that may be contributing or causing your problems. Because after a few sessions, your therapist should be able to tell you, you know, what your diagnosis is, including a detailed treatment plan. You want to know what the plan of action is to help you go from A to B to C to D. And I also believe, and this is my bias after practicing for all these years, that anything less than weekly sessions, at least in the beginning, is not going to enable you to have the best possible momentum in order to achieve success in your therapy. And if money is a problem, and I think that money is a problem for a lot of people, do not be afraid. Don't be reluctant to try to negotiate your fee with your therapist or even suggest a patient a payment plan. And, you know, I'll share something with you. I have always been willing to negotiate fees with patients. So again, this isn't just about your relationship with your therapist, but this is really about giving yourself permission to ask for what you want. And remember that your therapist, despite the degrees or despite the fact where they went to school, is not an all-knowing god or goddess. So even though it's tough, and even though you're not the kind of person initially, you know, who feels comfortable being assertive, it's important to try to at least be assertive with your therapist. Now, you should also ask, and ideally, your therapist should recommend whether or not your spouse or parent or siblings or children will need to participate in your therapy. Because clearly, think about this. If you are having relationship difficulties, it is essential, assuming that you feel safe, that your significant other participate at some point in your therapy. It is not possible to work on a couple's relationship if you're only dealing with one person. It is so critical to get the whole story. I mean, I have seen so many people where had I not met their significant other or spouse or partner, I never, ever, ever would have been able to get a clear picture about what really was going on and what the real issues were, and more importantly, what needed to be done to help people deal successfully with your issues. Number 9, in my opinion, your therapist should fully understand your family background and help you see how the past has affected your present situation and problems, helping you to understand. Can't change history, can't change something that happened a second ago, but helping you to understand how and why you have learned your self-destructive or destructive behavior. Unless this occurs, and I feel really strongly about this, and I know that there are therapists who only practice cognitive behavioral therapy, and other, you know, people are doing therapy in various different other ways. But what I have found, that unless you are able to really make the links between your past and your present and have a really clear understanding about how you got where you got to in your life, the good, the bad, and the ugly, I believe that your therapy and treatment will be bandage therapy at best, or a complete waste of time at worst. And I'm wondering, because I can imagine all of you sitting in your apartments or offices right now, and I'm sure many of you have been in therapy, or at least some of you have been in therapy, so curious what you have to think and say about what I'm talking about right now. Now, ideally, it would be wonderful to hear from you. So the number here on the Ask Beauty Show here on the Progressive Radio Network is 888-874-4888, because I would love to hear from you. Number 11. Okay, ongoing evaluation is necessary in order to determine how well or how badly your therapy is going. Like, if I'll say to somebody, well, how do you think things are going? And they say, I'm not sure. Well, we really need to talk about what is this not sure really all about. Expect at times that you're going to feel pain, since good therapy helps you take a hard and honest look at yourself. And the fact is that introspection may make you feel very, very vulnerable and sad. And remember that although we can't change the past, and I say this over and over and over again to people, what we can do is we can learn to understand and accept it and free ourselves from the chains and move forward. And you also want to make sure that your therapist is one that periodically evaluates with you how you're doing. And if necessary, ask them, what do you think? What do you think? Do you think that I am getting it? And of course, the proof is really in the pudding to be able to see how well you are doing in your life, in your relationships, at work, with your family, with your lovers, with your friends, with your colleagues. As you are going through the therapeutic process. Number 12, successful therapy depends not only on your therapist's expertise, but also on how much time, work, and energy you, yes, you are prepared to put into the therapeutic process. We can't do it alone. And a good therapist, we need to make that very clear. I mean, I routinely give people homework, after every single session. Now, I'm thinking of one woman now who has never lived her life in ways that are in her best interest. And she continues with her partner to engage in self-sabotaging, destructive, and self-destructive behavior. And we've broken this down into very, very concrete terms. And I've said to her, listen, when he speaks to you badly, what are you going to do? So the homework is A, to be aware of when her partner is disrespectful. And more importantly, or just as important, for her to be aware of what she is going to do differently than she has done for most of her life. It said boundaries for someone and with someone who consistently oversteps his boundaries. So homework is important, and accountability is really important. And it's not just being accountable to the therapist, it's really being accountable to one's self. Number 13. Okay, the big question of medication, to take medication, to not take medication. And this question often comes up. And although no one likes to go on medication, there are certain clinical situations. I mean, if you're looking at something like bipolar disorder, looking at psychosis, certainly requires a combination of medication and psychotherapy, which is why, again, it is so important that if you are someone who is needing psychiatric medication, that you are working with a really amazing, wonderful, experienced psychiatrist who is not just going to be meeting with you for 10 or 15 minutes and writing you an array of various different prescriptions. Again, whether we're talking about boyfriends or girlfriends or spouses, or therapists, or psychiatrists, or colleagues, or bosses, how careful. And I find myself saying this over and over and over every single day about how careful we have to be who we let into our lives. And that's not walking around being paranoid. just being smart. It's being smart for herself. And finally, please, please don't beat yourself up if you found that massage, acupuncture, and energy healing, and meditation, and vitamins, and exercise, and healthy eating have not helped to alleviate the depression or the anxiety or the post-traumatic stress disorder or other problems that you've been experiencing. And the fact is that brain chemistry is complex. So let the experts, again, finding the right expert is also really a challenge, do our job. And again, if you are someone who actually really does need to go on medication, and there have been a number of articles in the New York Times recently, you know, looking at antidepressant medication and doing trials, and there are some real questions about the benefits of many, many people going on these pills. But again, if you do need to go on medication, please find a skilled psychiatrist, not an internist, not a urologist, not a dermatologist or a cosmetologist or a plastic surgeon, who will work with you so that they really are on top of their game. They know what the effects of the medicine are. They've had a lot of experience in prescribing medication. And in that way, you will be able to keep yourself safe. And you also have to make sure that your therapist is open and up to date on whatever medication, if you're deciding that you're going to be on medication, that you are taking. And finally, we need to remember to spend at least as much time, hopefully a lot more time, researching your therapist as we would in deciding on which car or computer or cell phone to buy. It's a really important decision. And making the time and the effort to be a wise consumer will save us precious time, money and energy. So what I want to do is wish you a lot of luck. If you've been thinking about it, and finally today you made the decision, yes, I'm going to go and find a therapist. So good luck on your therapeutic journey. And there are many, many paths to these journey. And I hope that some of these steps that I have just outlined will help you get started. And I think that all of you know that if you need to reach me, all you ever need to do is go to my, you know, beautycone.com website, where all of my contact information is there. And of course, you'll be able to find out lots and lots and lots of things about me, and watch videos and read my articles, you know, etc. So again, are you? And this is the question that I ask you all every single week. Are you living your life? Are you doing what is actually in your best interest? And are you mindful about this? You know, it's kind of like you go to a restaurant and you're trying to lose some weight. And you're going to ask yourself, what is going to be best for me? Should I order an entire chocolate cake? Of course, I'm overstating it, right? Or am I going to be mindful? And since it's apparently so important that I lose some weight, that I am going to order something that is good for me, that is healthy for me, that is going to help me achieve my goal of losing a few pounds. And these are the questions. These are the questions that we have to ask ourselves across the board, whether or not we're talking about, you know, our mental health issues. You know, how am I feeling? Well, I've been feeling depressed for the last number of months. For many people that I see, they've been depressed for many, many, many years. So ultimately, at some point, we have to ask ourselves, what are we willing to do about this? It's one thing to be acknowledging a problem. I think we all do. We'd like to lose weight. We'd like to find someone to love us. We'd like to find a person who we can love. We'd like to get a better job. We'd like to make more money. I mean, there are all kinds of things that we wish for. And yet, ultimately, see, so that's the acknowledgement part. We are acknowledging that we want certain things, but then, part number two is to address what are we going to do? What are we going to do to get to where we want to go? And we have to be mindful, we have to be serious, and we have to have a lot of self-discipline in order to then be able to move to the third step, which is hopefully resolving as best as we can the issue or issues that we are trying to solve. And this is where I say, so oftentimes that, depending on what the issues are, it's hard to do it on our own, which is why, people, you talk about the luck of the draw. I mean, people are lucky if they have family and they have friends who they can really count on, when life is not going so well. And yet if you don't, I mean, I go on and on, then you need to give yourself permission and reach out and get some good professional help. So again, whether we're talking about your money situation, I got an email just before the show began from a woman, and I'm seeing her and her husband in couples counseling. And she told me something very, very disturbing. He makes about four times what she does. I mean, he makes a lot of money, like over $1 million a year. And she's working in a kind of an administrative assistant type of position. And in this email, and I've been seeing them off and on for the last couple of months. We took a break. Things seem better, but it seems as if they're going to need to come back because things are definitely not progressing as we had hoped. And she told me in this email that he expects that they are going to split the rent and all of their expenses 50-50. Now, this had never, ever, ever come up before in any of our sessions. She had never mentioned it. And in the email, she was saying that she was very concerned because there is a probability that these two are not going to make it for a variety of reasons. And she was wondering whether or not I felt that she was asking too much, that he not be expecting her to to pay 50-50. So here is a man who's making over $1 million a year. She's probably making 40 or 50,000, and they had never ever actually talked or resolved what their financial situation was going to be. And she's scared. She says that she doesn't have any savings. So I was wondering, what other things in our joint sessions have not been discussed? So I sent her an email again just before the show saying that I thought that she and I should have a one-on-one talk in person to talk about some of these things so that in our couple sessions, we would then be able to really raise the real issues and see whether or not they can be resolved. And when I talk about doing couples counseling, many of you know that I do this in a variety of different combinations. And sometimes seeing the couple together, I am not getting the full story. Well, it's 3:54, and where has the time actually gone today? But I have to tell you something really, really exciting. Next week, I'm going to have a guest, and my guest is going to be Dr. Andrew Solomon. And Dr. Solomon, he's a writer in politics and culture and psychology. He's a best-selling author, and he happened to be included in the Times list of 100 best books of the decade. And he's a professor of clinical psychology at Columbia University Medical Center, and a lecturer at Yale School of Medicine, and past president of PGMU. capital P, capital E, capital N, American Center. And he has wrote an amazing article in the New Yorker, which is why I had contacted him, The Mystifying Rise of Child Suicide in the United States. And you may not know this, but suicide is the third leading cause of death amongst young people aged 15 to 24 in the United States. And not only is Dr. Solomon a scholar, he really is a mensch. He's been so responsive and so sweet. And next week is going to be also a very special day for me with Dr. Solomon. I have not been to the Progressive Radio Network studio in over 2 years since the pandemic. And naturally, I wanted to meet Dr. Solomon in person, and I wanted to meet a lot of the new producers who are working at the Progressive Radio Network. So I am going to be going into the studio very, very excited to be doing that and to be able to interview and meet Dr. Andrew Solomon. It's going to be a really, really important show. The kids are not doing well. You know, we're going to be talking about, you know, the hours and hours and hours of time that kids are spending on their devices. They're not going out, they're not playing, they're not socializing face to face. So there are a lot of things that we're going to be talking about that will explain what is happening with these very high rates of depression and suicide. Well, everybody, again, an hour has come and gone, and I want to leave you with my two weekly messages. And the first message, and I want you to really take this in, is beginning today, if you didn't do this yesterday, to do everything that you could possibly do to be mindful about living your life across the board in ways that are in your best interest. So as you navigate your days, I want you to ask yourself the question, is this good for me or is this bad for me? And hopefully you're going to catch yourself and you are going to take the step that is good for me. And secondly, with the holidays approaching, we all need to really think about what we can do, not just think, but what we can do to find ways to love each other, regardless of whether we're Black or white or gay or straight. We need to do a much, much, much better job in learning to love each other across the board. So goodbye, everybody. Have a very, very good rest of the day and happy Thanksgiving. And I'll be talking with you and my guest, Dr. Andrew Solomon, next Monday at 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. So again, have a great rest of the day, and we'll talk soon. Bye-bye.